America. This is Eugene B. Colson with Mind Controlled America from the BBS Internet Radio Network. Our thanks to Donald Newsom for allowing us to hear this show. This show is about mind control of the United States. It's also about the paranormal and the BS that they do at Area 51, which is all part of mind control, and yes, it's real. If you watch television, you go to church, you are under some form of mind control. My guest today is the gentleman I had last week, Joseph Palermo, and we're going to be talking about Chupacabra. And there was a lot of hype back in the mid-90s, especially via the Art Bell Show. Now, Joseph, you're there, correct?
Yes, I'm here.
And haven't you done a lot of research into this mythical creature called the Chupacabra?
I'd say so, yes. Yes. And the research that I've done has demonstrated to me that this creature, or at least understanding of this creature, goes way back further than the mid-90s. I had occasion to meet a very nice young lady on a movie set I was working on, and when I found out that she was from Colombia, South America, or at least her family was, I had to ask her if she'd heard of the Chupacabra, and her eyes got real big, and she said, oh, yes, yes, that her grandmother used to tell her tales of the Chupacabra, that if the children weren't careful out in the field, that the Chupacabra might swoop in and grab them and take them away.
Well, how old was this lady, and approximately when did you meet her?
This young lady was, I'm going to guess, early 20s, college age. And when did I meet her? I'm going to guesstimate it was 97 or 98, something like that.
So then we're looking, her grandmother's experiences was probably sometime in the mid-50s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say that would be very safe to say, I would think.
Now, did the young lady claim to see anything else other than the little gray typical aliens or anything like that as well?
No. No. She didn't voice that to me. I mean, we were on like a 15-minute break on this movie set, so I didn't have time to pursue it. But she seemed very affected by what her grandmother had told her. And so it could be that she'd had other experiences. We just didn't have a chance to explore that.
And tell us about your research that you've done and
okay.
Where and when you did that.
Okay. The research started in, began in, I guess it was November of 95, when it was first brought to my attention that this creature was being spotted in Puerto Rico. A late friend of mine, Bob Buck, he and I both attended a MUFON meeting, Mutual UFO Network meeting, over in Collinsville, Illinois, and he brought over a faxed illustration of what this purported creature is supposed to look like, and it was just bizarre. Doesn't even really accurately describe this thing. It's bipedal, three toes. I've heard different versions of what the toes are supposed to look like, anything like bird's feet to dinosaur feet, something like that. This thing has a body of a kangaroo with very strong upper leg muscles that dwindle down into kind of thinner legs, lower legs, upper arms. Very scrawny, but with three digits, three fingers, but also have claws.
Both kind of like a Tyrannus Rex.
Yeah.
Arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, does this thing hop around like a kangaroo, or is it run?
Both, as I understand it. It's been seen hopping and running and flying. It has apparently a membrane between its upper arms and its lats, kind of like a flying squirrel might.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been, apparently it has been seen being able to give a good shove off with its feet and spread these wings and glide anyway. It hasn't appeared to flap, and it, given the structure of the membrane versus feathers, it wouldn't make any sense that it would be flapping anyhow, really. Now, of course, then there is how structure of how a bat's wings are, so it, I suppose it's possible that there could be flapping motion. But it hasn't been seen flapping. It would just often lift off and glide. Good.
How far would somebody say they saw it glide?
Well, we spoke with one witness, Miguel Augusto, and when he looked up, I think he said that he heard something, and he looked up and saw this thing already sailing in the air. So this thing apparently can glide for some distance, you know, further than just 100 feet, further than, you know, maybe at least the length of a football field, maybe further. I don't know. I guess if they can catch the appropriate updrafts, it could stay up there like any other winged creature could.
Now, Puerto Rico has got some mountains in it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Did they see it, you know, jump from a mountaintop or a rock top and glide any direction?
Not that I'm aware of. Most of the reports that we dealt with, that I dealt with, were eyewitness testimony pretty much from the ground. People were either in their home, and actually this leads into a very interesting aspect of the creature. This thing's eyes at night not just glow red, but they actually project a red light from them. And one witness, Carmen Martinez, said she would know that the creature was in the area because she could look out her kitchen window at night, and she could see the red light beam as this thing was looking around for stuff, and she knew to stay inside.
Does it have a tail like a kangaroo?
You know, I've seen an illustration in the mayor of Canovas's office that had a tail drawn onto it, but then it was scratched off, and the composite illustration of this thing that was in Jorge Martin's Evidencia OVNI, you know, evidence of UFOs, this particular illustration did not have a tail on it. So it's hard to say. I get the impression that no, it does not have a tail.
Approximately how tall are these things that they've reported?
Well, initially, I was told 3.5 to 4 foot tall. Okay, so we're down there. We're on an expedition in February of 96, actually in Puerto Rico, in the San Juan and Canovas area, and we're going through about 5 days of this, not just chupacabra, but other unexplained phenomena while we're down there. And that Friday, we were in Mayor Soto's office, the mayor of Canovas's office, and we're in the process of trying to locate a homicide detective that is alleged to have encountered and shot one of these things. So in the process of that, we're told that the civil defense is being dispatched to go on a Chupacabra report investigation. And they let us go with them. So we were fortunate. And I've got a lot of this in my documentary, Chupacabra, The Legend Begins, which is available on my website.
Were these men armed with any kind of weapons when they allowed you to go along?
No, they had just whatever normal stuff that they took. I don't recall seeing any weapons or anything, and it wasn't a call of the nature that, oh my God, there's a chupacabra in my backyard. It was a report that there had been an attack on some rabbits in the neighborhood. And that's why the civil defense was dispatching to investigate that. And we went with, and the reason I bring this up is because the homeowner, Millie, this very effervescent, older, blonde-haired, stout woman that also brought a machete with her, we were talking with her, we got her on camera, and it wasn't until months later, when I was working on my documentary, that I actually heard her say that she could tell the baby chupacabras from the mama chupacabras from the daddy chupacabras. So in answer to your question, she saw the little 4.5 foot tall guys, she saw 5 foot tall ones, and she saw 6 foot tall ones. So they vary in size, apparently.
You know, the wallabies, the kangaroos over in Australia and so forth, they have a range like that as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, some of the kangaroos are 6 foot tall. I mean, there's like 65 different kinds of kangaroos, and I don't know how many different kind of wallabies. But that's the range. Now, what department did she actually work for?
Oh, I have no idea what department she worked for. She was just, as far as I'm aware, she was just the person who owned the property where this took effect at. Now, it's interesting that you bring up various sizes of the kangaroos, and I think you and I may have alluded to this before, whether in private conversation or on radio last week. It's looking more and more like the chupacabra is some kind of a genetic experiment. And it may very well be that in this particular experiment, somebody, whoever, decided, well, let's take the body of a kangaroo and see what we can, you know, what we can do with it and see what we can make out of it and, you know, what, you know, let's just see. Because I was not aware that the sizes that she mentioned about the chupacabra were in pretty much proportion to what you just mentioned about the kangaroo.
Well, did she say whether or not it was a marsupial where it carried its babies with them?
No, that wasn't mentioned. She only indicated, I think what she was trying to indicate was she had seen the smaller ones by themselves, and then she'd seen the next size up and the next size up individually versus necessarily collectively.
Describe the head as the witnesses described it.
The head is very structurally very much like a gray from ufology. The eyes are kind of wraparound. They're longer than a typical gray eye, but they start out, you know, close to the ridge of the nose, and then they go kind of round and upward a little bit. If you were to do it on your own eye, stretch the corner, the outer corner of your eye around further to your temple and enlarge it a little bit. One of the witnesses, Madeline Tolentino, who got a very, very close, had a very close experience with one of these things. I mean, she was within 3 feet of one of these things. And this thing, when Madeline saw it, it was just kind of sauntering down the sidewalk midday. And during the day, this thing's eyes are black. So one of the very important, interesting observations that she made was while this thing was standing in front of her and it appeared to be looking straight forward because she was to its side, she got the distinct impression that if it wanted to, it could swing that eye all the way to the corner of its head and see her if it wanted to.
Which now, is its head gray like a gray?
Well, the overall body descriptions range from gray to spotted gray and black to a light brown, maybe a reddish, to... Now, I could be talking out of turn here, but it seems to me that I even heard some people describing even some greenish or bluish to the hair.
Really? Well, I wonder if this thing has the ability, like a chameleon, to change colors to match its environment.
Well, I think that's a definite possibility.
Now, where are its ears?
Well, from what Madeline said, it had some kind of a fleshy stub where an ear would be, but, I mean, it can hear. It can definitely hear because it's, from what Millie indicated, when people would be around it, it would, you know, its head would go that direction. It's like, oh, okay, something's coming up on me type thing. But it didn't seem to have an ear as we know it.
Does anybody claim that they've gotten any kind of telepathic message from it?
No.
When they were around it, were they gripped with fear or it's what, oh, gee, what's that?
Well, that's interesting. I think it depends on the encounter. If it's at night, people tended to freak out. During the daytime, people seem to be a little bit more brave around it. In fact, Madeline said that her mother saw it as something very graceful, something very curious. It's like she wanted to grab it and look at it. I guess like someone would oh, look at that cute dog. You know, you want to go pet it. That was the only case, though, that we were aware of where someone wasn't very, very frightened of this thing.
Does it have a snout like a dog or more like a cat?
It may be more, I would say, kind of maybe a combination of a snout between a dog and a baboon. Because that's one thing that people, as we were going from eyewitness to eyewitness that Sunday and showing the illustration that was on the back of Evidencia Ovni, they were all saying almost identical, except in the mouth place, a little more elongated forward.
So that sounds more like a dog.
Hard to say, because they weren't precise in how much further elongated.
Does it have teeth?
Yes, it has teeth.
Describe them.
It at least has fangs. Apparently similar, well, I don't want to go too much out on the limb because I'm not entirely sure, but it's been, the illustrations that I've seen of it have indicated overlapping canines of some sort. Now, whether that's an accurate portrayal, whether it's got teeth more like a snake that they only come out when it opens its mouth, because Madeline didn't see any fangs. It was this thing turned away from her and started across the street, and it happened that it was her husband's service station that he owned was right across the street, and she called out to one of his workers, Dito, you know, grab it. And Dito actually put on a pair of work gloves, and when he approached the thing, he saw it peel back the lips and kind of hiss, and then he saw the fangs.
The rest of the teeth, were they more like a humans or another animal's? Did it have, you know, like incisors like we have?
Have not had enough description of it. Don't know.
Now, is there any reports of it attempting to attack anyone?
We have had reports where people claim that they were attacked by the chupacabra. Here's the problem I have with that. All of the eyewitnesses that we spoke to didn't say anything about the chupacabra coming at them. You know, Madeline was 3 foot from this thing, and it didn't make a move towards her. Could have cared less whether she was there. When Dito approached it, it didn't face off with him like it was going to attack him. It hissed, bared its fangs, and then took off the other direction.
What would he describe the hiss as?
Just a hissing sound. And Millie, in that neighborhood, described a mumbling and a hissing sound. She said the hiss was almost like a whistle.
Well, if there was a rumbling in it, that would tend to indicate has some kind of cat species in it. Because if you've ever heard a lion when it's warning each other, or a leopard or something, they make similar sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I told you before, I've had the experience with the genetic experiments, the leopard men in Northeast
Columbia,
right, in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And you could take a computer model of a man and a leopard and just put them together on a computer, 50% of each characteristics, and that's exactly what they look like.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Had incisors, but fangs, upper and lower fangs. It was good in the trees. In fact, that's what they made the movie Predator about,
mm-hmm,
because at Area 51, they were trying to create the all-man, all-terrain, the killing team that doesn't need any supplies,
mm-hmm,
or weapons, and just release them. And
wow.
You know, so you towards the end of the show, if we hear a little bit more about the Chupacabra, we'll go into that a little bit.
Okay.
Now, tell me about the creature's tongue.
I'm sorry, the creature's what?
Tongue.
Oh, it's supposed to have a very, very flaccid, long tongue, similar to, given its size, I likened it to an anteater. But maybe it's like an anteater, maybe it's like a snake's tongue. Hard to tell because we didn't get a hard line description on it.
But is the end tug, is it end of the tug barbed or split or got a huge hole in it or something like that?
I believe the illustrations that I've seen is that it goes down like to a point. I don't recall whether it was. Some illustrations may have had it split, some may not. You know, it becomes a little bit of a challenge anytime you're dealing with an illustration of something, and that's why Jorge Martin had gone to the extent of getting a composite, trying to get the best odds on getting the best, you know, imagery. Because I have seen an illustration where it was forked like a snake tongue, and then other illustrations where it wasn't. But the really interesting situation with that is, and this is one of the aspects discovered through the necropsies of Dr. Carlos Soto, who volunteered a lot of his free time in doing the necropsies on alleged animal victims of the Chupacabra, not only out of Puerto Rico, but also out of Miami, Florida area.
Now, what is a necropsy?
Oh, okay. A necropsy is the same thing as an autopsy is on a human. A necropsy is to an animal. It's you know, taking the corpse and carefully going through layer by layer and finding out the cause of death, essentially. And Dr. Soto came across some very, very strange occurrences with or instances with these some of the necropsies. To begin with, none of the animals that he received were drained of blood. That's one of the alleged MOs of the Chupacabra, that it drains its animal victims of blood. Not true. At least not true of the animal victims that Soto had worked with. He said some of them had lesser amounts of blood. Some of them had the full amount of blood, but he has never worked on an animal that was completely drained of blood. So, that's number one. Number two, he discovered very quickly that the puncture wounds that were on the animal, and typically they're somewhere around the throat or shoulder area, typically. There was no saliva to be found on these puncture wounds.
So does everyone involved believe it was holding its victim with its hands?
Well, that was the conclusion that I came to. You know, as I was working on my documentary, I was going over this footage, you know, and listening, you know, where to edit, where to cut, and I'm like, no saliva? How is that? And then it suddenly occurred to me, the quote-unquote bike mark pattern was in sixes, and I thought, three digits on each hand, claws, wait a minute, this thing's sneaking up on these animals and grabbing them. That's what's causing the pattern of six alleged bite marks. So I came away with that. Now, I don't know if any of the other researchers have come up with that. I haven't heard anything. In fact, to the contrary, I keep hearing all this other crap, like from Texas, much to my dismay. But so okay, we have that fact. Then we have the fact that as Dr. Soto would begin his necropsy and begin peeling back layers of skin near the puncture wounds, he would discover, for example, in the area of one puncture wound, he might find four other punctures into the body that didn't start from the outer skin. It started down at that particular layer of skin being pulled back. And any one of those holes may have gone down into the animal and, for example, may have led to the heart muscle. And
are you talking about the claw marks or the tongue?
I'm talking about, my theory is this thing grabbed and killed with the claws and then probably used its tongue to go into one of those puncture wounds, down a little bit into the skin layers, and then started moving its tongue around within the body to get to specific organs. Because that appears to have been what happened.
Anyway, well,
go ahead.
A cat will always go for the guts.
Okay.
And the inner organs. To where a dog goes for the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it the inner organs that were always affected?
It was... Well, that's... Since the organs are on the inside of the body, I would have to say yes, but I understand what you're saying. Sometimes it was strips of heart muscle, sometimes it was strips of liver, could be the kidney. Now, he had one rabbit with absolutely no outer trauma to it, and when he started to open it up via the throat, when he got the throat sliced open, he found that both the trachea and the esophagus were gone. So one would have to figure that whatever this was went through the rabbit's mouth to do that.
Now, tell me more about this Dr. Show. Who does he work for and where does he come from?
Dr. Soto, as far as I am aware, is a veterinary down somewhere in Canovanas. Now, that was Bob Buck that actually got to meet with him and get the video footage that's in my documentary on him. We had the expedition in February of 96 that both Bob and I and the late Mark Davenport, who is the expedition leader, were on. And then after we came back, there was a Japanese news magazine that wanted to do a piece on the story. And Bob got called back down there to act as a guide for them. And that's when they came across Dr. Soto.
Well, Dr. Soto is a veterinarian down in Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Okay. Now, wasn't there somebody from New York or one of these institutes that volunteered to do some work for you?
There was that. You're probably referring to the Monster Quest episode that I participated in. History Channel did a segment with that, specifically on the Chupacabra. And what they did was Mark Davenport still had hair samples from our 96 expedition, which surprised the heck out of me. And they wanted to get analysis done. That's Monster Quest's big thing, is having shows where they can actually do some kind of scientific testing. You know, that's their hook. So they flew me down to Pensacola, Florida, where Mark was living at the time, and, you know, as the person that shot video and helped him collect the hair samples in the field. And we took, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 strands of hair that Mark still had, put those in a baggie, put those in a FedEx box to go to at least 1 or 2 different, I'll say, scientist teachers. And I don't remember the name of the one fellow, but he's apparently an archaeologist. I think it's at New York University. And much to my surprise, he indicated that the hair sample that we had sent, as well as a sample of the alleged chupacabra from the Texas area, were a 100% DNA match. And I'm not sure how that works. I mean, he said that they were canine, from the canine family. Which all that means is the hair samples that we gathered weren't actually chupacabra, that they were canine. Okay, well, that's fine. But these canines that are being called chupacabra in Texas are, in fact, very bizarre-looking creatures. They look like they could be scientific experimentation as well.
So they look different?
They do look different. there are fine qualities of difference, but they are different. And
but their hair samples matched.
Yeah, this would blew me away.
What I find very interesting, now, was there any other DNA that they could not identify in these hair samples?
Not that I'm aware of. If there was, they didn't put that in the show.
Well, you see, that's what I find very interesting, because I had Victor on from Canada, and he's with the UFO group,
mm-hmm.
and he had someone provide hair samples to which they had that he had tested.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he had a dream that he had two beautiful women sitting on the edge of his bed and had sex with him all night long, woke up and thought it was a dream, and he found long hair wrapped around his genitals, and he had it analyzed, and it said it was mostly somebody from Mongolia, but there were other DNA materials they could not identify.
Hmm.
Now, you know, being a trained interrogator like I am, mm-hmm. the first question pops into my mind when you told me this a while back was, okay, what didn't they tell you?
Sure.
Why did they not tell you the entire DNA strand?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the only thing I can offer on that is that they are a television show. They're out to provide some kind of interesting entertainment. And, you know, Joe Schneer was the producer I worked with, and he told me on the first phone call, he said, now look, we're not out to prove anything. So I don't want you misunderstanding this. We're out to, you know, do as much of a scientific analysis as we can and present the results, you know, whether they don't prove anything or they prove anything, you know, we're not out to do that. This is just a show. And I said, I understand that, you know, but then again, like you're saying, what all do they find out?
Well, if they can come up with evidence and prove something to get better ratings, it's my experience that most of these people that are claiming that they're exposing the shadow government, the Illuminati, the Jesuits, the devil worshippers, are their people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you told me initially several weeks ago
mm-hmm.
that when I asked you the question, what DNA that they had was not recognized, you know, my antennas went up immediately.
Yeah.
You know, because when they can't do it, from what I understand, as detailed a DNA sample from a hair as they can from tissue. But what's the rest of the story?
Yeah, I agree.
Why don't you give Monster Quest a call and say, hey, wait a minute, what about this? Can I get a copy of that DNA report?
I could do that. I'll email Joe and see if I can do that. Or at least he can give me the email to the guy out of, you know, New York University. And maybe I can get a complete report from him. That's a really good idea.
You know, because I'll be honest with you. I don't trust those guys. You know, I've had so many people, since I realized I was a mind control victim, I've had so many people approach me or try to get close to me, and then I turn out and find out it's their people trying to steer me astray or just to see what I'm doing or to become my new handler, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Monster Quest, you know, it's a big high-dollar operation, isn't it?
What did you say, high dollar?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I tell you what I have learned about most of these cable shows. They're glorified local cable TV programs, you know, where you know, they're going to be lucky that, you know, the producers probably said, okay, you know, you're going to do this, what all do you need to do, and they figured the absolute bottom dollar it's going to take to do this. And they may have said, here's $5,000, you know, do something on it. Or if you need six, okay, here's six.
I've seen Monster Quest traveling around Europe and other parts of the world. Now, maybe there was a lower budget one that you had, but they're on History Channel all the time.
Yeah.
On our programs.
Well, that's true. But you'd be surprised how inexpensive you can do that with. You know, if I'm going to do a show in Europe, I don't bring an American crew over there and all that. I hire a crew over there for, you know, very little. As an example of what happened with me, it was a fast 24-hour trip for me. They paid my flight down and back, they paid for my rent-a-car. And to be honest about it, I would say probably the amount of money that they spent on me was probably somewhere around $250. That's it.
Total.
Total.
Flight and everything.
Yeah.
Well, you must have got a really cheap flight.
I did. I did. I had connecting flight both ways. And they paid for the room. But I mean, so maybe that was $350. But
now, did you have any ongoing contact with them after that?
Not so far. I mean, we emailed back and forth a little bit for reimbursement. I told them, I'd be happy to, hopefully we can work again on doing something. And the producer did tell me that, they're definitely keeping me on file for, future shows. So, we'll see what happens with that. In my experience, and I mean, television production has been a lot of my career. These guys, the producers are just doing their job. Now, the owners of KPI TV, that are the people behind Monster Quest, do they have other agendas? Don't know. Do the people who own them have other agendas? Don't know. They can. There's degrees of separation that occur when you're dealing with something like this. So, it could be, two or three or four lines up of ownership where something could be going on. Let's have this company create this company to create this company to then have this company actually do something and go in the field and find stuff out.
And possibly have another company under the same umbrella that's going to refute it.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, conglomerates, none of the motion picture studios out there are themselves by now. They haven't been that for years. Paramount was bought by, Gulf and Western Oil, 40 years ago. So almost anything you see on television isn't by so much owned by the people that they're presented as being owned by.
Now, did you have any, you said there were chupacabras spotted in Miami.
There were reports of chupacabras in Miami, yes.
Did you talk with any of those people?
No, our expedition only covered Puerto Rico. We didn't do any investigation in Miami. And since the Puerto Rico trip, I've been very limited in my ability to try to make contact with people. Quite honestly, a lot of these reports, a lot, from the basic information that I get from these, I wouldn't even bother getting a plane ticket to go look at it. It got the chupacabra concept became so high profile that for years, and I still see, with Texas, this thing that's been going on for 2 years now in Texas, the livestock are being killed and there's blood around. And in fact, the woman, Carrion, I think is her last name, was talking to a relative on the phone about her dead animals, and her brother, this relative, whoever it was, suggests to her, sounds like you've got a chupacabra. So with no necropsy, with no scientific investigation, no nothing, suddenly the story is about chupacabra. And boy, did it have legs. I mean, for 2 years they've been talking about this.
So you're saying, a 6 foot tall chupacabra?
These aren't chupacabras in Texas at all. These are very strange looking canines. A lot of people, there have been some. The only kind of scientific documentation that was done on these things, because they were actually able to shoot and kill a number of these things. See, that's another difference between that and the Puerto Rico chupacabra. No one's got a Puerto Rico chupacabra.
Did they got pictures of it? They put it on display?
From Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, to me, it looks like a canine mutation, whether it's a mutated dog, whether it's a mutated coyote. But it's, if you look at it, your mind has no problem saying, oh, this must be a bull. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
People that see the chupacabra, it doesn't fit into any mental picture of anything that they've ever seen, and that's what freaks them out.
What did you see the picture they had of that monster that washed up on the New Jersey shore about a month ago?
The Montauk creature.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
It, to me, looked very much body-wise like a pig, a fowl, something like that. The legs seemed to be short. The body was just, well, it's hard to tell because you don't have anything within the picture to give a good, you know, comparison, really.
Yeah, but it had a snout similar to, a mutated dog.
The one from Montauk?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Well, they were saying that it had a beak in front.
Well, it kind of looked like a cross between a beak and it had some teeth on it. They showed it on
there were teeth.
CNN.
Yeah.
And they were sharp teeth. They weren't, you know.
Yes. Yes, they were. Yes, they
were. And Montauk, is that where it washed up in Montauk?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting and coincidental that one of the mind control projects, I believe it was in the 50s, early 60s, was Project Montauk.
Yes. Yes. Yes, indeed. And I'm still waiting to get contact with my friend Stuart Thurlow about that.
Yeah, and when you get a hold of him, yeah, give him my phone number, or if I can get his, I'd very much like to talk to him. Because, you know, what I see similarities here is, when they put these out, they're trying to get people afraid that there's something that they need to be saved from. And, you know, I know there's a phony UFO invasion planned at some time during the tribulation, you know, where they make these things at Area 51 and the other ones like it. I understand there's one in Europe, one in Australia, one in China, and one in Russia.
Mm.
And there might be several in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they took me in 2003, they took me to Area 51, sublevels 1.1 to 21.1. 21.1 is a mile diameter round substructure, and as far as you could see, there were cages and cages and cages of genetic experiments.
Wow.
They can gene splice man with animal, man with insect, animal with animal, or a mixture thereof, and come up with whatever they, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what they do.
Can anybody say Island of Dr. Moreau?
Oh, yeah, very much. I mean, and they've probably been doing this since the crash at Roswell. But, you know, the scientist, when I was there, I said, where did this come from? They said, well, we think it came from pre-flood man and possibly other worlds like Mars and a planet that used to be clean. Mars and Earth.
Huh.
Yeah, and my personal take on it is I believe in God and the Bible, and that Satan had rebelled and was given the opportunity to repent several times, and he ended up destroying each world, like we're trying to destroy our Earth with nuclear holocaust. And that's my personal opinion based on, you know, my experience with these wonderful people that create these monsters.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, these are some sick puppies.
Oh, apparently. Apparently. I was just out of curiosity. I went online to find out when the Island of Dr. Moreau was actually written. It was late 19th century. And
yeah, they made a movie. Well, you know, there's been so many reports of these quote-unquote grays in any gravity devices coming and visiting man throughout, the centuries, that I think these things were in hyperstasis in outer space to some levels.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to return to Earth to feed, because my experience with the grays is they eat people. That's what they eat.
Hmm.
And, you know, and if any pre-flood man went out there with him for any length of time, I'm sure he became dinner.
Just out of curiosity, and we're kind of turning tables here at the last part of the hour. Share with our listeners what information or what experiences you've had that has brought you to that conclusion about Gray's having humans as food.
Well, you know, if you listen to the first show that I did on this network, you'd have to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I explain in great detail my encounter at Area 51, sublevels 1.1 to 21.1. These
mm-hmm.
things are created there.
Mm-hmm.
They're created, you know. The technology came from pre-flood man or probably pre-world man, and after Noah's flood, they had to either tunnel underground or go into outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's what happened. And, you know, in Chupacabra, it strikes me, the way you're describing it is some of the stuff I saw at level 21.1.
Very
now,
interesting.
I believe it's all part of the one world order, and there's always a demonic satanic tie to it. And they're constantly trying to put information out to get everybody afraid, even the religions. Oh, we got to be protected through the tribulation. Like Worldwide Church of God. I mean, it's all, you know, we got to be afraid and run to them for our guidance and protection so that we're mind controlled. We actually believe the crap that they put out.
Well, now if we take that to its logical conclusion, the situation with the Chupacabra for a short time, for some people, there was some fear. The Chupacabra, quote-unquote, out of Texas, certainly didn't generate fear. Generated a lot of interest in people coming to the town, just like the Stephenville, Texas UFO sightings. The Montauk creature just generated a lot of curiosity because the only thing with that Montauk wash-up was a cell phone picture that three women claimed that they saw this thing, and there's a piece on YouTube where there's an interview with these three gals by a local cable television company. No one except these three gals saw this thing.
Well, I saw a clip on CNN where there was also a couple college kids who took it and buried it. And they dug it back up. Of course, it was all decomposed and bones, and they said this creature had bones that nobody could recognize. If I remember correctly.
Well, I'd like to go see that, because my understanding from the interview I did see was that, you know, some friends of theirs got it, and they buried it in the backyard, and the interviewer was like, well, you know, when are we going to see it? Well, we don't actually have it, because it's been dug up, and now we're not sure where it's at.
Yeah, you know what you see out there on the news,
mm-hmm.
you know, is either a fabrication or a partial truth. They never tell you the full truth.
Yeah, well, which is why, you know, I'm working to do what I'm working to do. You know, I spent a little bit of my own nickel going on that expedition to Puerto Rico to hopefully bring back video of an actual chupacabra. That was my intent, and I'm not. You know, I don't have any apologies to make about the interviews I brought back. And certainly with Bob Butt, the footage that he shot with Dr. Soto, you know, that he insisted be in my documentary, which I'm very grateful that he did, you know, that becomes invaluable historic evidence of what was going on. I got with Lloyd Pye. For your listeners, Lloyd Pye is the man who became the caretaker for quite a while of what became known as the Star Child skull. You weren't talking about a potential smoking gun. You know, this thing, the analysis they've done, it looks like it should belong to a gray. It just does. Somebody else you might consider having on your program. You know, I videotaped a very detailed interview with Lloyd and with both the obviously human skull and the anomalous skull. And he goes point by point on why this skull is very likely, at least partially, if not total, alien. I was down in Middle Tennessee.
Did they do any DNA analysis on it, or was there a DNA they couldn't?
They've been working on doing that, yeah, and the results that they get just add more questions. The of this anomalous skull. While the skull itself is three times lighter than the human skull, it has far greater brain capacity than the human skull. And the anomalous skull is estimated to be only be that of like a five-year-old based on the teeth. There were teeth found with this thing, too, based on the wear and tear of the teeth.
Were they humanoid teeth or were they sharp spikes?
That I don't know because I haven't seen them. I don't remember if he's got a picture of them on the website or not. But the within the bone, there's something akin to enamel, which is part of the reason that the bone is so hard to deal with. There is an extraordinarily high aluminum content.
Oh, yeah, the heavy metals that they, when I was there, they would take a 15-year-old clone host, take a three-month incubated fetus inside the host, and then they would hook a tube to its head called a phlebotomy, and they'd pump in diseases, animal DNA, insect DNA, and heavy metals to make circuit boards at a nanotechnology level. So they're bio supercomputers. So for aluminum, did they find any mercury in the bones as well?
That was not. I don't think it was reported. It's been a while since I've looked at the video of that. There are fiber-like things all throughout the bone, but they don't know where they came from. And I think they're supposed to have some sort of a metallic property to them.
That would be plutonium.
They found red residue in the cancellous holes of the body, of the skull. So with the way Lloyd says that, you know, when you die, you know, the bacteria and all that spit shines the bones. There's no organic material left. So if this red residue within the cancellous bone structure is in fact organic, then I think they estimated the skull to actually be like 1,400 years old.
Now, the one in Texas, did anybody describe it as making a barking or howling sound like a dog or a wolf?
Let me think about that for a quick second. I don't think so.
Nobody described that sound?
It's interesting you bring that up because even when they shot these things, they didn't say anything about it letting out a yelp or anything.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anything else you want to add about the chupacabra that I neglected to ask you?
Oh, well, what I would recommend is that people go to my website, www.its-dms.com, and they can read about my report that I've got up there. They can see a sample of the documentary I've got. And for the entire documentary, it's only like $3.50. It's a video download. So if you want the story, you know, in its entirety pretty much, you know, go to the website, download the video, study it for yourself.
What have you been doing since your expedition in Puerto Rico?
Keeping my eyes open. dealing with a variety of paranormal subjects that just seem to be on the uprise. And I'm not sure why it is, whether people are just becoming more aware and are doing more reporting of them, but there's in the area that I live in, there's been more UFO activity occurring, particularly with the triangular-shaped craft. There's been unrest in homes, as in spirit activity going on, that I've been working with the homeowners and helping them get rid of, you know, what doesn't need to be there. And working to do more in video documenting these things in order to bring it to the attention of the public. Because as you and I have been talking throughout this program, mainstream media isn't going to bring them all of the data. You know,
That's like Planet X. You know, I was at Starbucks last week, mm-hmm. You know, sitting there, and a guy sits down, having his coffee, smoking a cigarette, mm-hmm. And, you know, I start asking him questions. I say, hey, where are you from? And he says, up I forget where it is. I said, what do you do? He says, well, I work with optics at MIT. I said, oh, you're an astrologer. He goes, well, yeah. I said, tell me about Planet X. And he said, well, it's a rock going over, rotating around the sun. I said, is it smooth on one side? He goes, yes. He said, but we think the other side is rocky. And I said, how big is it? And he said, oh, it's a little bit bigger than the moon. And before I could answer another question, he was gone. And it looked like he was sitting there, going to sit there for, you know,
wow,
20 minutes, a half hour. But, you know, once I started asking him questions, he was history. But on a regular basis, they send people to be around me to see what I'll pick up.
Mm-hmm.
I at the same Starbucks. I've met the number two guy at the GAO office.
Huh.
Yeah, and he knew quite a bit about me. He knew quite a bit about a number of things. He knew quite a bit about an assassination on a very high-profile person in the world that was averted by me last October when I got him warned. Have you had any people come around you that your antennas come up and you think, well, wait a minute, is this a coincidence or what?
No, not typically. I don't know that I've ever had that.
Well, I've had quite a bit of that.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Is there anything else about the Chupacabra that comes to your mind that you want to put out on the show?
Just that with everything that I've been able to think about with it, with all the data that we've gotten, all that kind of thing, I lean more towards the idea that this thing is some kind of a creation versus an interdimensional being or an extraterrestrial or something like that.
I would tend to agree with you. I mean,
too much of it. I mean, it seems pieces. If I look at all the pieces individually, I can see terrestrial, but they shouldn't be there together. You know, one of the other things, this thing has apparently some kind of appendages from the top of its, roughly the cranium, that goes all the way down the back to the tailbone. When it gets alerted, so to speak, these things come up almost like porcupine quills, but they don't fire off. They just seem to be feathers, and they'll be different colors, and they will vibrate horizontally. What animal does that?
Aren't there some lizards that do that?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there are some lizards that have that spiny thing, kind of like fish do. You know, fish have the fin, some of them down the back. A friend of mine got fin pretty good with a catfish, and I've seen that. But none that are feather-like that then vibrate horizontally.
And what about the insect world? Because, like I said, they gene splice between man, animal, and insect.
Well, that's possible. That's possible. I mean, this, from a typical standard scientific, biological standpoint, this thing should not have the characteristics it does. However, it does. So someone, somewhere out there, has found a way to put all that together and make it work, apparently. Now, we know nothing about the thing's lifespan. The animals that it attacks, it doesn't eat. It doesn't tear them apart. It just puncture wounds. Like we say, probably the tongue going into the body. Taking samples, it doesn't take the entire heart, doesn't take the entire liver, it takes strips, like it's sampling, and then goes on its merry way. Makes no sense.
Yeah, well, you know, these grays, they can put them into different various forms of hyperstasis, because when I was 10 years old, they had one of them in my parents' bedroom, because I grew up in a ritual, satanic ritual neighborhood, probably a generational satanic ritual family. And it looked like one of the grays that were at Area 51, which were much stockier, had round eyes as opposed to the thin grays they have now with the slanted eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the head wasn't, in relationship to its body, was nowhere near as big as what the grays are now, that's typically reported.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that one was over several thousand years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they can put them in some form of hyperstasis to where they can you know, last, as far as we're concerned, almost indefinitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Could very well be.
Now, did any of the, were these things spotted by any younger children? Would they come around children more than adults?
That is a very good question. We only interviewed adults. We were not made aware of any child witnesses if there were.
Yeah, that's what I find curious.
We did not get to do the thorough. We didn't get to do the thorough investigation I would like to have seen. This expedition was put together. Half the people were doing it as a vacation. There were only a few of us that were serious researchers. So we got yanked from one location to the other location, another location. And, like, I mean, you're asking a ton of very good questions, Eugene. Very good investigative questions. And I wish I had answers for you. If I'm able to get money together, I'll go back down there and I'll do the investigation that needs to be done on this.
Yeah, take me with you, and I'll talk to them casually, but I'll interrogate them, and they won't know they're being interrogated. Now, we're at the end of the show. I'd like you to give your contact information out one more time.
Okay. Best way to get a hold of me is through my website, www.iasandivan, T as in Thomas, S as in Stephen, - D as in David, M as in Michael, S as in Stephen.com.
Okay, well, Joe Palermo, we're at the end of the show. This is, I thank you for coming on and being my guest again.
You're welcome.
And this is Eugene B. Colson at Mind Controlled America, signing off.